Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show, breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your hosts, Rohan Khabib and Chris Herring.
Welcome back to another episode of the Crossover Podcast. I'm Rohan Khabib, joined today by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer, New York Times best-selling author of the book Blood in the Garden, Chris Herring. Chris, how are you, brother?
I'm good, and I guess off air I asked you how are you doing, and you just laughed because, like, what an absurd question given how we know how you're feeling. But I don't know. Just to be polite, I'll ask a second time. How are you, Rohan?
Chris, I know you don't watch necessarily the same movies and television I do. I don't assume that you've seen the movie Avengers Infinity War, but there's a scene at the end of that movie where the villain, I guess you could say, is walking around a farm and he just sits contentedly on his porch as the sun sets, as he has completed his mission. That's how I feel today. That is how I feel today. The world is a little brighter. The flowers smell a little bit more like flowers. Things taste better. That's how I feel today, Chris Herring. Not because the Miami Heat became only the second 8 seed ever to make the NBA Finals.
Rocked with that succession ending. That's what it was.
not because Eric Spoelstra cemented his place as one of, if not the greatest coach in NBA history, not because Jimmy Butler continues to be one of the greatest playoff performers of our time, but because we do not have to live in a world in which the Boston Celtics came back from a 3-0 deficit, because we never would have heard the end of it for the rest of our lives. You know, they would have been playing the Derek White shot in montages for the next 50 years. We would have to hear all about Celtics history. We would have had to hear all about Red Auerbach. We would have had to hear all kinds of, you know, garbage for the next 50 years. And the Miami Heat saved us from that, Chris. They saved us from the Boston media mafia meeting together in a back room to decide more awards for the next few seasons.
So instead, we get to hear, and it's no knock, because one way or the other I was prepared to hear one side of it or the other, but the flip side of it is having a team with way less institutional history, basically all tied to Pat Riley, about culture and grit and toughness, which we saw all of it in the series, so it's not to say it's false, but it's like we get to hear that and get to hear about how underappreciated Spo is, and he has been. Again, I'm not disputing any of this. We get to hear about Jimmy and how, you know, like, I'm a Chicago person just from the standpoint of that's where I've lived. I don't care fandom wise or anything like that. But, you know, that multiple franchises have had an opportunity to lock him up and appreciate him the way he deserves to be. And, you know, and text messages that Jimmy sent to Coco Gauff and to everything else. Like, we get to hear all of it, and we get to hear about Udonis Haslam and his greatness.
Hey, you,
and
so you, it's like, do not, you put some respect on three-time champion.
I have literally Udonis put Haslam respect on every right single now. Person's name that I've mentioned. I'm not taking anything away. I'm just saying that you're so deep in the bag that, like, yes, we would have heard the Boston stuff, and I think that you were allergic to hearing the Boston stuff because you were a Miami person, but
no,
one way or the everyone, other. Man. The only everyone, team we don't hear it from is Denver because they've never done this before, and Phoenix really, when they've done it because they've never done it before. So it's like the only fan bases we're not going to hear braggadocious behavior from are the ones that haven't had enough to brag about.
Before. No.
This is just part of what it is.
This isn't about bragging. First of all, what you called "quote unquote" institutional history with the Celtics, I called ancient history. Okay, because in the last 35 years since the Miami Heat have been in existence, the Celtics have won a whopping one championship. Okay, you know how many of their championship highlights are in black and white? So I don't want to hear about institutional history. Okay, what have you done since the NBA actually turned into the NBA? I'm not that impressed. Second of all, let's not
done a ton. That's what I'm saying. I'm not taking that from them. I'm just saying that we're going to hear, and it's not. I don't even want to call it hagiography because we're too in the middle of it. But it's. I mean, it's like you're going to hear full throated appreciation of either franchise. Had the Celtics won yesterday, we would have gotten a lot of that, and it would have been somewhat deserved because they would have come back from 3-0. You know, but now I don't know. It just doesn't have to be completely binary is all I'm saying.
No matter how
it played out, the Heat had a lot to be proud of. Spoelstra deserves every platitude and every single honor, accolade he's going to get. He already has gotten plenty, but I still feel like there are people that didn't fully appreciate him. Jimmy, the same is true of. Shout out to Caleb Martin, man. Mm-hmm. Like, in all seriousness, someone that maybe we weren't going to hear those things about. But that man is going to get paid at some point, and he's going to deserve every penny he gets, if only for this season and only for this playoff run. But yeah, there's a lot of that on any time you have franchises that really dislike each other as much as I would imagine those two do. Maybe some of it was taken away when Danny Ainge left, but I feel like there's still plenty of it's a rivalry that's a really great one at this point.
For sure.
I think we can say that.
We're going to get to the game. I'll just end our little opening conversation by saying I'm very glad that our overrepresented in the media Boston friends will not be able to write the narrative about this series. Chris, there's a lot we need to get to on this show today. We're going to preview the finals a little bit. We got to talk about Bob Myers leaving the Golden State Warriors at some point. But let's start with Heat Celtics Game 7. Listen, I was at Game 6. And that was the most shocking basketball game I've seen in my entire life. Yeah. I don't think I'll go the rest of my life seeing a game end in the manner that Game 6 did. And after the game, walking around the arena, everyone was shell-shocked. From the fans to the media, everyone was clearly needing to process what had happened. And I thought it was interesting, Eric Spoelstra, you know, kind of ran up to the podium after the game and said, "We want to tip off Game 7 right now. We look. That's how amped up we are to play." And you know that.
Seemed important.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure on some level he's trying to keep a brave face for his guys. Jimmy Butler, same thing. He said, "I just need to play better and we'll win. If I play better, we're not even in this position." You know, I think part of it is their leadership styles. They don't want to show any weakness, but I think that clearly carried through because, Chris, I'm shocked by how that Game 7 played out. I can come up here and say all these things about Heat culture, playoff Jimmy, Spo, blah, blah, blah. I thought the Celtics were going to win running away. I thought the Celtics were going to win running away in Game 7. I'm shocked by that outcome. Where do you even want to begin with this game? Because it was fascinating on so many levels.
I mean, we can start there if you want to, because as we talk about all this stuff, and even in the, you know, the Game 7 look ahead that I wrote before it took place, obviously. I harped on that point you just raised of how, and also this probably speaks to the way certain people are wired. Jimmy, Spo, it would be really easy to just be painfully honest and brutally honest about how heart-wrenching a loss like that is. At home, an opportunity to go to the finals as an 8 seed in a series that you were dying to finish because you were up 3-0. We all were shell-shocked. So imagine what that feeling is when you work for that team, when you play for that team. Mm-hmm. I you know, the announcers, and I know you were there, but I imagine you saw the clips of it afterwards. The announcers thought that the shot was late. Mm-hmm. Derek White's shot was late. And so only after they watched it again, they were like, oh, wow, that counts. This series is still going on. There were people in the stands, obviously you were there, you know this, that thought that the game had ended.
And people exhaled. The Heat had people, won. When Smart right. Shot rimmed out, you could feel it. You can feel an energy. It was like, whew. And then it was, nope.
And I imagine the Heat did the same thing, which was part mm-hmm. of how Derek White got the shot off. And, you know, nobody really blocked out effectively. White got the tip, but even on the other side of the rim, Jason Tatum was prepared to do the same thing. So it literally, you know, maybe more than any other moment I can think of in sports history that I can remember off the top of my head, at least, even more so than the Derek Fisher play, which was a fundamentally different play. This was something where it's like you have to play the full 48, not 47:59.1. You have to play 59.9. You got to play the whole mm-hmm. 48 minutes. And if you even let up for a tenth of a second, you can get beat. So taking all of that into account and just the wrenching nature of that, the Celtics had so much momentum from that standpoint. I also wonder if, to some extent, the Celtics were emotionally spent in some ways because Derek White was damn near in tears during the walk-off post-game press conference. Interview, I guess I would call it, not a press conference. And the interviewer kept alluding to the fact that he looked glassy-eyed. So just to get to that point, we see it all the time in games where teams work their way back from a 15-point deficit in the game, and then they just don't have enough gas to get over the finish line. So I think it was really, really telling in some ways that the first play of the game, Jason Tatum rolls his ankle and does not look right. It's not an excuse. I don't have a reason to excuse it because I don't have a rooting interest here. I don't care. But obviously he didn't look right. You could see him wincing. You could see
him laboring. He clearly is coming out if that's a regular season game. I mean, there's no question in my mind.
Yeah, and how often in regular season games do we see people hurt themselves on the first play? I mean, it's part of the reason why I think even for the Heat, and we saw it with Gabe Vincent, why you so desperately wanted to finish this series because anything can happen. That could have happened to Butler, and the series completely shifts after that. So Miami had every interest in ending the series as quickly as they could. If they could have done it in game four, they would have done that. That shifted the tenor of it right off the bat. You're then watching Tatum closely just to see, like, does he have it to give? And when he doesn't, frankly, then it's like, okay, what can Jaylen Brown give us? And Jaylen Brown was horrible handling the ball, even more so than he normally is. The most turnovers he's ever committed. And it was a game where, you know, the Celtics for a second straight game, after watching them for two consecutive games shoot really well from outside, they just did not have it from outside again. When you take that, you take the fact that Tatum is not himself and Brown is fumbling the ball around and the Heat are making their shots and not afraid of the moment, which I think, you know, to go full circle, goes all the way back to Spo and Jimmy in those moments where it would be so easy to just say, we're really, really flustered here. Mm-hmm. This is a lot. We're going on the road. It's scary. I would probably say that because I'd be honest. And right. I feel like Spo, if you watch his press conference multiple times, which I did, or at least his response when he first got to the podium, he sounds a little shell-shocked initially, and then channels it differently midstream and saying, like, if we could get out there right now, and he repeats himself, you could see him trying to will his team over the line just to give them that hope. Jimmy does the same thing when he does his press conference. And that's energy that, like, when I think about that and I think about some of the stuff that Pat Riley has said over the years, or the way that Michael Jordan talked in his documentary, these guys are wired differently. And you sometimes need someone to be that way, which will be an interesting challenge for the Nuggets if they get in a tight series with the Heat. Because we now see that the Heat are wired a certain way through their leadership and maybe beyond that. The Nuggets have been tested over the years from an emotional standpoint, and we've watched Jokic lose his composure. We've watched the team lose their composure and make it or break it, you know, make or break moments in the playoffs. Not when they've been this complete and this talented, but we've seen it. And so it'll be interesting. Like, I don't think any team wants a tight series with the Heat. I don't think that the Nuggets, who have more talent and more of a complete roster, want to test that either, despite the fact that they're favored, despite the fact that they have, at this point, I think the guy that you probably, even I have to acknowledge, is probably the best player in the world at this moment and is playing like it. We saw so much about the tenor of what this team is. They know who they are. I'll readily admit that Tyler Hero coming back in the middle of this final series can potentially change stuff too, for better, potentially, also potentially for worse, as someone that needs to get his rhythm back, as someone that is not really a great defender. I mean, that's putting it mildly. So we'll see. But we saw so much about the Heat's character, even in the moments immediately after Game 6, which made us all think for a moment, they might be able to do this. Like, I might not be able to do it. You might not, but they might be able to. And they did it. And they deserve so much credit. All the narratives and all the Heat culture stuff stripped away, just that moment and the importance of that moment, and the fact that they were speaking to their own team more than they were speaking to the media in that moment. And I think that they knocked it out of the park.
It's very cool. And I just have the utmost respect for Spoelstra, even though he has become an expert at dodging questions and kind of reshaping them into saying what he wants to say. I think there are few people like him in professional sports. I'll never forget the time he told me that he got too focused on winning and not focused enough on coaching. Making that distinction is very rare. Very rare to, you know, we hear all the time about people, they have a high IQ. Do they also have a high EQ? Spo loves to talk about emotional stability. I don't know if there's anyone who has it more than him. I thought Brian Windhorst made a good point on SportsCenter after the game last night. He said Spo's the most disciplined guy in the NBA. He's like, Spo probably still weighs the same he did when he was a college point guard. He is so meticulous, and his attention to detail is just incredible. And I thought, you know, getting into the game specifically last night, you know, obviously Tatum's injury kind of clouded it for the Celtics. Something that I thought was, I'd been waiting for the Heat to do it. Obviously, they'd had success playing their zone defense for stretches of the series. But there are times when they play this lineup with Martin, Vincent, Butler, Strus, and Bam. Strus has done a fantastic job defensively over the course of the last two playoffs. He'll get beat, but not to the point where, you know, we talk about someone like Tyler Hero. Like, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum passed off the Strus switch multiple times in the series. He got stops multiple times. He created turnovers multiple times. He was not someone who they could just attack over and over again like a Kevin Love or Cody Zeller. And last night it felt like Miami was kind of finally like, okay, we're done messing around. We're switching everything. And that's why you have someone like Bam Adebayo, right? I think there's one guy in the NBA. Literally, I think there's one guy in the NBA Bam can't guard effectively. It happens to be the player they're playing in the next round, Nikola Jokic. But it felt like they were finally switching everything, finding success. Offensively, I mean, I'm selfish. I wrote about Caleb Martin yesterday. It's funny. I told Caleb Martin before game three, I was like, I think you're at worst the third best player on this team, and I think you should be starting. And he just kind of laughed. But lo and behold, he's starting in game six and seven. And it feels like every time the Celtics are going on a run, Caleb Martin hits a pull-up two. Caleb Martin hits a big three. I mean, he outplayed Jaylen Brown in this series. There's really no other way to say it.
He had that baseline jumper yesterday where he came from the other side of the rim.
Right, like, turned around. What is going on?
It's just, I mean, he just, the confidence that he played with, that he's been playing with, because it's not just this series. It's not just yesterday's game, obviously. He's been playing that way for a minute. I mean, the Heat have obviously been shorthanded. He's been really good all season. As you pointed out, you know, the potentially being the third best guy on the team, which I think is why so many of us are saying, obviously there's a huge opportunity for a payday there, but it's not like, it's not going to end up being like some random overpay. He looks like the way he's been playing lately looks like he's ready for a bigger role. Mm-hmm. And if he's potentially good enough to be a number two on like a decent team, he's essentially taken some of what you were asking Hero to do. Maybe he's not completely initiating possessions, but the stuff that he's able to do, even just mm-hmm. off the dribble when guys are expecting him to pull up or to catch and shoot, is some of the stuff that Hero started with in his career and quite frankly flourished with in his career. But I mean, the ability to step up in that moment when you are missing your number two scorer essentially is just so massive in a series where you're playing against a great defense, at least a defense that should be great. So you can't say enough about him and just how big he's been in the series. Also, you know, not something that I'm normally going to say, so let me go ahead and say it. Duncan Robinson had moments in this series defensively where he stepped up.
Shout out to Duncan Robinson, man. Again, game six, he got a couple stops on Jaylen Brown. In game seven, he blocked a Jaylen Brown three. I'm so happy for Duncan Robinson because people were saying, oh, he can't shoot outside the bubble. He stopped trying once he got his contract. For him, he was out of the rotation this season. Out of the rotation. The only reason he got back in is because Tyler Hero got hurt in the first round. I don't think Spo was planning to use him in the playoffs. And there he is playing huge minutes in this series. Was a huge plus for the Heat in this series. And showed not only that he's more than a shooter, all the different ways he could impact winning in the playoffs, the back cuts, his two-man game with Bam Adebayo, his passing improved. You mentioned the defense. He had some really high-profile defensive moments in this series, and especially after the game six he had, I was worried Duncan Robinson was going to be remembered for missing those two shots late in game six, those two open threes, when the team's not even in the game without him. He made the same number of field goals as Jimmy Butler in game six. He earned his redemption in game seven. We haven't talked much about Jimmy. I think he had 28, 7, and 6 with three steals. Right. And that's like, you kind of just take those kind of stat lines for granted now from great players.
Yeah.
But hitting the pull-up threes, just maintaining a control of the game, I thought Jimmy was fantastic, man. Shout out to the Heat. We're obviously going to talk quite a bit about them. We're going to talk a little about the finals in a second. But real quick before we do, I wrote about this for SI today, and I'm curious your opinion. I feel like some people are already saying the Celtics need to break it up. They need to blow it up, maybe fire the coach. You can't give Jaylen Brown the Supermax extension. You mentioned the things Pat Riley has said over the years. I'm sure you remember well, Chris, the speech he gave in 2014 when the Heat lost to the Spurs. And he said, you have to have the guts. He's like, teams stay together. Listen, that speech is infamous. It didn't work. LeBron didn't return.
Right.
I think he's right. And I think it applies to where the Celtics are right now. The reason this loss hurts for the Celtics is because the expectations are high. And the reason the expectations are high is because Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have been ahead of schedule their entire careers. Since Jason Tatum entered the league, the Bucks have made the conference finals twice and they've lost in the first round twice. Celtics have made the conference finals four times. They made the finals once. They're second in playoff wins since 2019. I don't know why you'd break a team up like this. They're going to get more bites at the apple. Tatum and Brown probably aren't even in the prime of their careers yet. This is an unequivocal loss. Like, this is bad. You were the number two seed going into the eight seed, the rival, the team that you beat last year. They should not have lost this series. But to me, the idea of breaking them up, even when you take into account, you know, CBA concerns, whatever, I think that's crazy.
I mean, look, I've seen a lot of different stuff over the last, what has it been since they lost? Not 24 hours, but You know, people comparing even just Jordan and Pippen as far as how much success did they have at this age, had they had by this point in their career. And essentially, they had not started winning their titles yet when you look at the age that Tatum and Brown are. And so the idea that you leave them together, even after the losses to the Pistons repeatedly, you have to watch them grow. You have to go through that pain of what it is to get to the mountaintop. It's very rare that teams just get there and do it. It basically doesn't happen for the most part. I think the difference here, and one more thing I'll add in that column of like leave them together, is Joe Mazzulla had a couple days before media day, you know, that he was told that he was going to get the job.
Guy was thrown into an unprecedented. And listen, I regret because we kind of, I personally kind of killed him a little bit on one of the podcasts we did recently. And maybe I'm being a little prisoner of the moment, the fact that they pushed it to a game seven. But when you look at the totality of his season, taking over when he did and leading to the team to the conference finals, that's pretty successful. But anyway, continue.
I mean, that how many wins did they end up with this year? Whatever it was, 50-something, like mid-50s, high-50s, whatever it was. They get all those wins. They finish as a top-five team on both sides of the ball. Were there flaws? Absolutely. Like, dude needs to call timeouts more quickly. I don't think that it's as simple as saying, like, we only made this many threes. There are times where that's not the answer every single time. Even if it is the answer, maybe part of the answer in addition to that is also the idea that there need to be go-tos and fixes. And I can't believe I'm agreeing with Charles Barkley this often, but like there needs to be a plan B sometimes of what else you're doing. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's Derek White, like we saw yesterday, that like you need to have some stuff going toward the basket that isn't just Jaylen Brown putting his head down and trying to figure out how to avoid a turnover. You need to have a little bit more to that. It's part of why you got Malcolm Brogdon, by the way. So there's
who is hurt.
I would imagine. There's going to be some changes. I don't know what they're going to be. I don't think it should be Jaylen Brown not being in a Celtics uniform. That's also Jaylen Brown's decision. It's not just the Celtics. We could have a conversation about whether he would actually take the deal. It's a lot to turn down that much money. We are talking about money that, unless I'm mistaken, we're talking about closer to $300 million than we are $200 million. It's a lot of money that we're talking about for somebody like that over the course of the next 5-6 years, whatever. He's made it very clear that there are aspects that he was not happy with regards to Boston. If you want to talk about the fan base, if you want to talk about the lack of trust that he had from the standpoint of how badly he's actually wanted there. I also applaud him for taking accountability for how poorly he played yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a very interesting individual. He's someone that I trust that the work ethic is going to be there to continue to improve and not just rely on the fact that I'm in my prime, I'm going to get better naturally. I think that about him. That said, I'm also surprised it's taken this long for his ball handling to significantly improve to where this
yes.
is a problem. So all I'll say is that to me, the natural fit here, the natural fix here is to give Mazzulla more time and a full off season to actually prepare for this job, to prepare to be back where they are and then exceed where they've gotten. It's to give him more experience on his bench and more front of the bench type guys, which they weren't able to get this year, and which they also had a brain drain from that standpoint of Stoudemire leaving, Ime Udoka obviously not. Will Hardy taking the job with the Jazz. This is all stuff that I imagine Brad Stevens will help him with and coach him through and put out the money to go get guys from that standpoint. Now, that said, I would imagine that after this sort of failure to a team that was not as talented, I would also imagine that you might see some personnel shifts, whether it is Smart. I don't think it'll be Brown, but if Brown makes a decision not to come back, then obviously it would be Brown. What else is getting fixed, altered? I'm not sure. They've got a lot of talent on this team where they could make a decision to go in a lot of different directions to try to get, I wouldn't even think it's depth. I would just think it's a better fitting piece somehow mm-hmm. of maybe even a little bit more ball handling, even though it seems like they have a lot of that. So we'll see. There were times fundamentally where Al Horford really didn't show up the way we would right. expect him to. He's an older guy. He's a very good player, but he's an older guy. We have the whole Grant Williams question hovering too of whether you're going to bring him back and whether some of his challenges this year were contract related, even though he still shot damn near 40% and is a good defender. So we're going to see a lot of things like that are possibilities to really be altered here. Some might be really big picture. I don't think Joe Mazzulla should not be back. I think that would be very weird, particularly when you consider that he has the connection and he was handpicked by Brad Stevens to replace Ime Udoka when all this stuff happened on a very, very short schedule without time to really prep for a lot of this. I think he's allowed to be different from Ime Udoka. That's fine. But if the ways in which he's different hinder the team and they do the same thing next year with a talent disparity where they have that much more talent than the team they're playing, then maybe he isn't back. But I don't think it would make sense to – I don't know what people were expecting. Like, ultimately, if they lost – and they very easily could have lost Game 7 last year had Jimmy made the three. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they lose this year in a Game 7 where they were down 3-0, I think you could have had the conversation about whether he – should have gone if they got swept. They didn't. They took it to seven.
Mm-hmm.
And then lost in a game seven when Jason Tatum rolled his ankle in the first play of the game. Like, to me, that doesn't spell fire the coach. I'm not right. in a rush to do that if I'm Brad Stevens or Wick Grosbeck or what have you. So I expect that he'll be back, but I imagine that there will be at least one significant change to their rotation, whether it's Smart, whether it's Brown, and the idea that they're getting the signal that he doesn't want to come back and they try to figure something out elsewhere, with, whether it's a sign and trade or anything else. But it's a very interesting question. It's a team that should be in this conversation for years to come, one way or the other, no matter what they choose to do. But everybody's got to come back with a little bit more. Tatum, I've seen this critique, and for a while I was like, I don't know if that's what it is. But the more I see it, the more I think I agree. There are times where he looks like he's got an advantage and wants to get too cute with the ball and just dribbles too much instead of firing away. I'm not sure what that is a symptom of or why that happens. This is a team that when they're really humming, they're moving the ball and they make quick decisions. Tatum, of course, we know he can take guys one-on-one. He doesn't have to. And there's times where it's like he's so determined to do that and so determined to kind of – have it look a certain way aesthetically almost that it's like, just go out and ball, just go play. Especially when you got the floor spread the way you do, you're making it more complicated for yourself to let guys load up on you the more you do the one-on-one stuff. So we'll see what happens. I'm very curious to see it because this is a team that when it's all said and done, if they were to finish with two or three championships, it wouldn't be surprising because they've got that much talent. They've got guys that are in the prime of their career or that they should be entering that. So, you know, it's a matter of them finding the exact combination they need, figuring out whether Mazzulla is the guy, and the next 2-3 years should start to spell some of that out.
Absolutely. You mentioned that they should be here for a long time, and I get that Brown has a decision to make. I'm just saying, if I'm the Celtics, to make this simple, I offer him the Supermax. I'd be shocked if he turned it down, and I think as long as you have Tatum and Brown, you're in position to compete for a championship every year. Yes, obviously they should make some rotation changes. They got to add, the players got to get better. Everyone has to be better, right? But that's what losses do. They motivate you. Bam Adebayo came back a different player this year because they lost to the Celtics last year. Eric Spoelstra changed how the Heat play offensively because they lost to the Celtics last year. This is, to me, part of the natural progression for teams. And I think Boston, as long as they have Tatum and Brown, are going to be in a position to compete, even with their flaws. And even if we've seen their flaws hurt them on the highest level, they're only at the highest level because of those two guys and how great they are. And I think it would be very short-sighted to break them up because of this series or because they lost to Steph Curry in the finals. Guess what? So did LeBron James multiple times.
I mean, the one thing that I think is fair, like it's not, I don't think it's totally off to like at least take a deep breath before you hand over this money to Jaylen Brown. It's not a talent question.
Mm.
It's more a question of, this is going to eat up so much of our cap that we're going to, and if we don't win in the next year or two for whatever reason, if it's injuries, whatever else, I imagine you could trade that into something else, but it's just you're going to kind of lock down your roster and that's it. That like that's who you have at that point. It's just so much money and so much cap allocation to two people. When you have other guys that make real money and will make real money over the next few years, that I think you have to be cognizant of it. I don't think it's like an automatic, absolutely, we want him back. There's no questions asked. I understand thinking it through. It's the same reason I understood them thinking through and potentially weighing the possibility, potentially trading Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant. Of like, who would you rather pay that kind of money to? And it's a fair question. Like, I understand that Durant is always probably right. going to be a little bit banged up, nicked up. So I get it, but it's just a question of like, how much more do you see Brown progressing?
Right.
And are there potentially better fits? Like, can Tatum handle more of a workload if it means that somebody else can handle the ball better and take care of the ball better? And I don't think there's an immediate answer, an obvious answer to that question. The easiest thing to do would be to sign him and figure the rest of it out later. Even at that money,
yes.
The best thing would be like if he agrees to take a little bit less than that, which I don't imagine he would do. I could be off.
Right.
If he comes back, I don't imagine it's taking discounts. If he's already saying that he doesn't
right.
trust y'all,
I mean, I'll just say that I think you know looming over all this right is you and I don't know how the CBA is going to play out over the next few years. If it's in fact normal for teams to be super two guy top heavy. That just remains to be seen. I'd rather have the problem of paying two guys that have proven they can get me to the finals and conference finals almost every year than, right. you know, taking a chance on the number three pick or whatever the case may be.
By the way, I'm not moved by that. Like, let me be really clear on that. Like, that's not what I would want to move him for. Like, to me, I don't even know who you'd be getting back. Pick wise, like it's not for me, it's not about picks as much as it's about what sort of ready made talent do we have right now that just they've been in the wrong situation. And you know, and I remember this was a sexy conversation piece last year of like the Dame situation. And you know, could you do that? Okay, we could have that conversation if that's what it was going to be, but I don't imagine that that's what Portland saw. Right. I think Portland would like want to trade the pick and hope that that's enough. Jaylen Brown at this point is probably closer to being moved for the number one pick in this draft than the number three, in my opinion. And I don't think that the Spurs would do it, number one. But number two, I think that he, like, if you're having a super max conversation with someone at that money, it's not for the number three pick, which likely will pan out and be a really good player, but we don't even know that. So I don't think you're moving him for that, certainly when you're on the doorstep of the NBA Finals. For a second straight year. But it'll be fascinating to see it play out. Already know the knocks that will come from the fan base and everybody else if, number one, he's been somewhat disgruntled about his situation there, and two, if he gets back to the stage and performs this way a third time in terms of the turnovers and everything else, or if the team continues to falter and they do find themselves in a situation where they're essentially capped out and can't really improve the team many other ways than trading him. That's going to happen if this comes up again. But again, to your point, wouldn't you rather take the let's just get there and then figure it out? I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I just also don't think there's anything wrong with considering the options. I would do it quietly so that Jaylen Brown's not in my face, you know, about like, yo, y'all was trying to trade me for KD. But I do think that it's worth considering, like, looking at it closely. That's all. I don't know what that means or what it leads
you're
to.
Just a, you're just a guy on a podcast asking questions. That's it.
I'm also hedging a little bit, but I think, I think that it would be blasphemy to say you have to break them up. I think we can all agree on that. I agree with your column from the standpoint of this is still a young core. At least these two guys, but even the core generally is very, very young. You shouldn't be looking to do it. I think that you should at least have it in the back of your mind. Like, if he doesn't want to come back, what are our contingencies? And if he does want to come back, are we completely committed to doing it exactly this way at the Supermax? I think that those are fair questions to ask and to think about. That's all I'm saying.
Listen, as someone who thinks they should bring him back, am I going to write Jaylen Brown fake trades? You better believe it. And am I gonna make them extra annoying just for our buddy Michael the Pod Pina?
Am I going to get this content? You damn right.
Guaranteed.
Come on, man.
Guaranteed. Am I going to trade Jaylen Brown for Michael Pena's favorite player, Trey Young? 1,000%.
Oh, and he's talking to somebody. This is off the rails.
Pena and I made a truce during this series. And I told him, thank God we made a truce. Boo.
Sorry. I know. That was stuff that Nikias Duncan would have said.
That's true. And I told Pena, I told Pena after game six, I said, thank God we made a truce, because I would have been saying insane stuff when the Heat went up 3-0. And obviously I was terrified after game six. So we've been very civil to each other, and that will continue until I write my Jaylen Brown fake trades column, in which case my goal is to make Pena and the Boston Media Mafia as angry as possible. Oh, gosh. Oh, man. What a hilarious outcome. Let's get to the NBA Finals briefly, only because I think we'll have more time to really dive into the series later. I know a lot of people were already doing their Heat Nuggets film dives. I was not. I wanted the series to end, but now I have very little time to do so.
Right.
Let me just ask you this one question, because I think this is going to be the crux of the series and why I think Denver's going to win and why I'm picking the Nuggets in five. If you are the Miami Heat, how would you guard the Joker Jamal two-man game?
Oof. Can I just say it's going to be really interesting to watch them try to do it with the zone? I mean,
yes.
It's going to be really interesting just because, first of all, just from the standpoint of what a zone does, and I understand the Heat, their zone morphs and shifts and changes. They move Bam around in it. It's different. They can play it higher up so that threes are not an automatic part of the equation for whatever team you're playing against. That said, the ability, it still creates a challenging question from the standpoint that just like you can move Bam around, you can move Jokic around too.
Yep.
He's playing in so many different spots. And I've always thought this, and I've been trying to put numbers to it and haven't been able to do it yet, which is why I haven't written on it directly. But it absolutely feels like the longer Jokic has the ball as a passer, the more screwed you are defensively. Mm-hmm. Because he's biding his time to find somebody, whether it's through a cut, whether it's through help, and the idea that somebody pops open because you've helped off someone, and Jokic is fundamentally like calculating that. I mean, he literally is like, you've ever seen like Terminator and robots and stuff like that, where you see the inside of their brain and all the imagery that they see, and it's like they've got a target, you know, their eyes are targets basically, and they're zeroing in on someone. And it's like Jokic does that. You've seen those heat maps and those like those percentage bubbles that they put on the screen sometimes of like the likelihood of a shot going in. Jokic has that in his head. And it's like that's the way he plays the game. So from that standpoint, I really don't know what this defensive attack is going to look like in guarding those two. I could imagine. I wouldn't be surprised if in game one, given the layoff that the Nuggets have had and the fact that Miami has been playing as frequently as they have, if for a while they have the Nuggets looking out of sync. That won't surprise me. That's a kind of normal game one thing anyway. I will be really afraid on a lot of different levels if the layoff did nothing to the Nuggets and they just look like they're humming. Mm-hmm. Because at that point, like if they do that within Miami playing zone and playing a defense that can trip teams up, certainly the Celtics, we saw it all series. We saw it every fourth quarter, basically, in those close games. If we see that and the Nuggets look comfortable with it, look, I love Eric Spoelstra as much as anybody who's not you, basically. But I worry a little bit for Miami if it just looks easy for the Nuggets right off the bat.
I mean, nobody has had answers for Jokic for three seasons now. And you could seemingly put any four players around him and he will still give you an incredible offense. And, like, Jokic is comfortable playing at the free throw line. Like, something the zone does is it, like, teams miss good looks because they're getting shots out of rhythm. They're getting shots in a way they're not used to getting shots. Mm-hmm. The Nuggets like to play that free-flowing style. They like to play chaotic. They like to play loose. They, you know, they can put Jokic at the free throw line. First of all, it's a shot he's comfortable taking. He'll take it over and over again if you really give it to him. Like, you might not get as many Jokic post-ups if you play zone, but that's what makes him so good, is there's so many ways for him to hurt you. And I thought in Game 7, I mentioned this at the top, the Heat's defense looked the best it looked all series, I thought, when they were switching everything, just taking away Boston's threes. You could try to get away with switching Jamal Murray and Jokic with Jimmy and Bam. But first of all, Bam already struggles with Jokic. As much respect as we all have for Jimmy Butler,
I know
Jokic will post him up and win that matchup the vast majority of the time. And beyond that, if you're asking Jimmy Butler to guard Jamal Murray, that's going to affect him offensively. You know the Heat like to put guys like Gabe Vincent and Caleb Martin on guards like Jamal Murray. So I just think Jokic is such a matchup problem for every team, but especially this Heat team. I don't know how they begin to guard those two guys. And they don't have the – you know, the Lakers had the size where they could get away with putting Davis on Gordon and doubling – and I do think that's a worthwhile strategy, even though Michael Malone was kind of making fun of it after the Rui Hachimura game. But the Heat don't have the size. They don't have someone who they could get away with on Jokic and let Bam run.
You're going to have to take the chance, at least occasionally, of letting somebody else beat you. Which we watched other teams try that, by the way. I mean, literally, we would watch teams kind of oscillate between, okay, we're going to go after Jokic, then Murray goes for 37. Okay, we're going to take away all the other options. Then Jokic has a, you know, what was it, a couple rounds ago, hit the 53 points or whatever.
I think I'd try to let Jokic go for 50. I know that sounds insane, but number one, he doesn't seem to really want to. I think it could be tiring for him, because I just think if you let Jamal get going from three, if you let their shooters get going,
everybody else beats you if you do that, right? You know? And so I think that's an option for them. I also wonder if doubling takes some of the heat off of, be it Butler or Bam. I really don't want those two getting so worn down trying to contain Murray and Jokic one-on-one. I don't want that. Certainly in switch situations where it's Jimmy trying to do it against Jokic every other play.
Right.
You're asking too much of Jimmy, certainly before Hero is back. And even once he is back, you're just putting too much on his plate against a team that I don't think they're going to give Jimmy fits defensively, but they're good enough defensively to make him work. So I'm not sure how I want to start the series, but obviously at some point you're going to have to try to just take a deep breath when Jokic kicks out to open guys.
Right.
You're going to have to force Bruce Brown and, as much as it sucks, KCP and, you know, from time to time, Murray. Porter, obviously, is a big one, just because the guy is one of the best shooters the league has ever seen.
Right.
Although I don't think he's quite thought of that way yet. We know that. You know, he just is. He hasn't played long enough to really be considered that way, but he's
statistically unreal.
One of the best shooters we've ever seen. So certainly when he's open. So you're going to have to try to live and die with that a little bit. You're probably going to lose at least one game, maybe two, over the course of the series of watching that happen. But just the methodical style that Jokic plays with, even if he does score, he's normally not going to go right away. Like, he's going to grind the possession down, trying to find a pass first before he does it himself. And if you force him to, he'll do it. And he can still beat you that way. He will beat you that way. But if you're the Heat, you don't want this to be a quick up and down game, certainly in Denver.
No way.
So you're better off letting him grind you down by taking 7 or 8 seconds to score after he decides, fine, y'all are going to make me do this myself. Fine. I would rather play that game. I think where they could get in trouble is if the Heat really struggle offensively and they're just missing shots left and right. Guess what? That allows Jokic to speed the game up too, because he can just take it and go himself and find guys down the floor or, you know, whatever. So you have to be very careful. Like, my priority in game one of this series is to slow this thing down.
Yes.
If I'm Miami, for 12 different reasons, but not the least of which is the fact that we watched the Nuggets run the Lakers up and down in the first two games of that series, and it's like it doesn't work. let alone the altitude issue that is going to really wear Miami mm-hmm. down. They've played more lately, and so that is going to have an impact on them. Maybe it will on Denver a little bit too, but they're used to playing there, so it's different. So that's priority number one, of just trying to keep the game. Like, you're the underdog here. I don't mean to say play like it, but like treat this like Virginia. You know, shout out to Malcolm Brogdon. Treat this like Virginia, where like you're going to almost assume the position of the lesser team, at least in this first game, as the underdog, as a team that is a little bit tired and banged up. Slow this game down. Try to take it to a situation where you're Miami. You know the clutch situations better than anybody because you basically played in more games like this than anybody. Bring it to the last few minutes of the game and try to hope that Jimmy or Bam can take you home.
Yeah. If I had to guess, I think Jimmy will start on Aaron Gordon. That allows him to roam, get in the passing lanes. You know, Strewson, Michael Porter Jr., probably Caleb Martin on KCP or Jamal Murray, Gabe Vincent on the other. That's how I assume Miami will start. I'll just say for Miami's offense, they have had success against drop coverage. I think the Celtics can do a good job flattening them out when they switch. If the Nuggets switch, Jimmy will find either MPJ or Jamal, and I think he'll have success. If they drop, Caleb Martin, Gabe Vincent, especially Gabe Vincent, who was fantastic against Boston when they dropped their bigs, either getting to the rim, pulling up for three. You know, Spo said we need his assertiveness looking at the rim. He has to be the same guy. He has to be the same guy he was in the Celtics series. If he has even a slight drop off, I don't think Miami can score anywhere near enough to get with the Nuggets. So he's going to have to be able to attack. Caleb Martin's going to have to be able to attack. I do think the Heat, who had some good offensive games against the Celtics, will be able to find the kind of offense they're comfortable with, the same way they did against the Bucks, the same way they did against the Knicks at times, because of just the way Denver plays. The thing is, can they do it consistently and at a high level enough to keep up with Denver's offense? I'm not sure. I'm picking Nuggets in five. What's your pick, Herring?
I really hate picking against Miami just after we watched them miserable. Lay everybody to waste.
I did pick them to beat the Celtics for whatever what it's worth. The only one.
I mean, I picked the Celtics in. I picked the Celtics in seven initially, just out of respect for Miami.
Right.
Do I think the Nuggets are better than the Celtics and the Heat? Yeah. So I mean, I'll take the Nuggets in six. I know there will be people, and I haven't heard you doing this, so shout out to you. But like, I know there will be people that are saying like, "Oh, Hero comes back mid-series. It's a new day once that happens." I just think that for someone that has been out of the mix for a while, of course you welcome his scoring if he has it and if he looks himself. I just wonder that he, you know, worry that he gets lost defensively against a team that you can't afford to do that with. Like, the Nuggets are just so in sync, and so the idea of throwing someone in that is out of sync with this Miami group, I mean, this will sound blasphemous. I don't fully believe it, but if I'm going full like Radio Chris today, give me Duncan Robinson and the way he's been playing defensively and the fact that he's offensively sometimes really has it going. Almost give me him in rhythm than like Tyler Hero out of rhythm, out of sync against this Denver team, just because Denver... Again, they play like a Tron or a Zord or a robot led by their two-time MVP robot that is going to pick you apart and has the potential to do that. And I worry that the ability to do that just increases even more when you are throwing in a guy that I imagine you're going to want to play him long minutes. It's, you know, it was not a devastating leg injury. It was his hand. So you're going to have him out there trying to use that shooting hand quite a bit. To try to give you enough offense to keep pace with a team that can really score. So I just like the Nuggets here. Obviously, I'm eager to see it. I really was not chomping at the bit to do a preview about the series. One, because like you said, there wasn't much time to do it with the way this shook out. But two, I feel like we'll have a slightly better image of whether Miami can stay really competitive in this series after the first game or two. If they look competitive on the road in Denver, and granted, I guess to some extent the Lakers did too. There were moments where they looked like they almost got blown off the floor, but they did make it competitive by the end of each game one and game two. They also got swept. So it could be a situation like that, but I'm very curious to see whether this is even a competitive series. I want to give Miami the benefit of the doubt that they'll do that, but I also wouldn't be surprised if the Nuggets make quick work of them. But I'm going to, out of respect, I'll give the Nuggets, say Nuggets in six.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. I'm excited to see it play out. But, you know, I would be very happy for either of these teams to win the finals. I love watching both of them play. Let's real quick, before we get out of here, we just found out right before we started recording, Bob Myers is stepping down as Warriors GM. This comes as an interesting time for Golden State, considering they have some big decisions to make in this offseason and really just figuring out the future of this franchise, because if they want to keep Steph, Clay, and Dre together, this new CBA with the second tax apron was really designed to break up a team like the Warriors. It feels really targeted at Golden State, and they're losing kind of the architect of it. Not only someone who made generally pretty good decisions building out this roster, but clearly had the trust of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. Draymond saying he wanted to see what happened with Bob Myers before making decisions on his future. You know, not normally is an executive's decision this big of a deal. This feels like a big deal. What do you kind of make of this? Do you have any kind of expectations for how this plays out now?
Yeah. I mean, it just, first of all, the guy is fantastic at his job. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that he did the job perfectly or that the organization did the job perfectly. We can all point to the fact that they tried and gambled quite a bit on the idea of trying to two-track this title run, title window, of saying, you know, maybe we can, you know, Steph, Clay, Draymond, and then have the next generation of, like, Poole. I mean, obviously, Poole is kind of the guy that bridged the two, or that they saw as bridging the two, but Poole, Kuminga, Wiseman. And look, that didn't work. That hasn't worked. They already have gotten off of Wiseman's deal and traded him for not even, what did they get? A couple second rounders? And I can't remember.
For Wiseman? Gary Payton the second.
You're right. So they, but they did that, and even in that case, they didn't get him back fully healthy. So I mean, it was just a
they could have just signed him back.
And that was
back.
Probably why they even concluded the trade and finalized the trade, was like, this is too embarrassing to bring him back in this situation. So, I mean, it was a weird, I mean, to get off of a guy that was the number two pick, and also to think about who else they could have gotten with that pick, it didn't play right. Like, so not everything went right, but also, you can't talk about Bob Myers and focus on the stuff that went wrong. So much went right here. Bringing in Steve Kerr, quite frankly, and doing that when they did it, giving him the latitude to change things the way he did, discovering Draymond and exactly what he was and unlocking that. The Steph, the maturation of Steph.
Not trading Klay Thompson. Not trading Klay Thompson for Kevin Love.
So some of the moves they didn't make, you know, deserve so much credit. Keeping the team together.
Turning D'Lo into Wiggins.
I mean, that might have been the biggest part of it, right? After, you know, the KD stuff, navigating them in and out of that. A book could be written just about Bob, to be quite honest with you. He's been that good. So, again, I don't want to over-focus or over-harp on anything that he did wrong. He also has earned every right to do what he wants to do for these next few years. Or if he wants to join another team and kind of take the highest offer. Whatever he wants to do. It sounds like he had an opportunity to take an ownership stake here and decided not to. So all the respect in the world for him. It obviously raises a big question now of whoever replaces him, which it sounds like it's going to be internal with the way that's done. What do they think and how do they think of Draymond, who is up or could be up, but I imagine is going to be up this year looking for maybe not a bigger payday, but one that has years to it.
Yeah.
That is going to be longer, bigger, longer money, all things considered. You're going to have to figure out your situation with Klay at some point of what realistically do you see of, like, how much does he have left? He has moments where he is just a firecracker. He's got other moments where he seems to hinder you. That doesn't even get to the question of what about Jordan Poole? Who really was not, I mean, to put it mildly, was not really good.
He regressed
at all.
He regressed.
He pressed really bad. He regressed. He is just a sieve defensively a lot of the time. He does not always have the best timing when it comes to shot selection. He does not have the highest IQ. And it's really easy to overlook some of the flaws that he has when you're winning championships. Mm-hmm. It's not when you look like you might be able to win one and don't. They could have won one this year. I think that the Wiggins absence for as long as it was really hurt them. I think the road stuff hurt them. The fact that they were on the fence about what direction they wanted to take and that they thought that they could win with a young bench hurt them. And so, again, there were flaws at a certain point with the way that they played this, with the way that Myers played this. I think that's okay. I think it's a gamble. It could have, you know, mm-hmm. we would have been talking about how great they were.
And I think ownership played a role in that as well.
Light years ahead. So,
yeah.
Like, you have to acknowledge that, but that's not, like, the first thing you say about the guy and the job he did. He was incredible. He'll end up somewhere eventually. I'm looking at our text messages. We have people on our staff that have a pretty firm sense of, like, what will happen with him eventually. he's great at what he does. He deserves a ton of credit. It becomes very interesting now to watch what happens with the Warriors in the next couple of years. It would have been anyway. It becomes more interesting now because I feel like with Bob Myers in charge, you could bet on the fact that he was going to gamble with the core guys, even if it meant someone was going to take a little bit less or the deal was going to look a little bit different. You felt like he was going to go down guns blazing with those guys. I still think that that's more likely than not, but you don't know that until you know who's in charge. And maybe it becomes someone that, you know, was really offended by the Draymond punch on Jordan Poole. I think everybody was, but maybe they were more offended than Bob Myers was. And maybe he doesn't come back. Maybe it's someone that emboldens Jordan Poole even more. We don't know yet, but it's going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, it really is one of the greatest dynasties we've ever seen. Shout out to Bob Myers. He's done a fantastic job. He deserves every opportunity that comes his way, whether it's now, whether it's 2 years from now, what have you.
I am so fascinated to see what happens with Draymond Green now, because I think Bob Myers is also someone who's played conflict mediator with him, therapist, so many things that go into just simply making trades and signing people. And I think it was telling that Draymond's been saying, my decision's going to be tied to Bob to an extent. I don't think that means just because Bob Myers is leaving, Draymond is leaving, but the Warriors are at a bit of a crossroads here, Chris, because I thought Bob Myers was coming back. I really thought he would come back.
I thought
so, too. They still have Steph. The league is good, but no team is so far above the Warriors that it didn't feel like, it felt to me like they could be back in the finals next year if they make the right move or two. As long as you have Steph, and the fact that he's walking away from it, I don't know if he knows, he's thinking of something in the CBA that he's nervous about. Maybe it is just ownership didn't give him the right contract. I don't know what it is. Maybe he thinks there's more money out there for him somewhere else. I have no idea. I'm just speculating.
Can I say this? From the standpoint of, like, I don't fundamentally care. I've said this repeatedly. I'm not a fan of any team necessarily. Like, I don't care who wins, who loses. Mm-hmm. I'm not that into it anymore from that standpoint. I haven't been for a long, long time. As a basketball observer, to me, the most fascinating matchup would have been in the West to watch Denver and the Warriors. I mean, obviously,
yes,
the
I wanted
Lakers
to see that
outplayed
again.
Them.
I wanted to see Denver beat that matchup. Yes.
Exactly. And so it's like, it's not, again, no knock on the Lakers. It's not me hating on them. I didn't care. I wanted
it just
to would see
have been
the most
fascinating
competitive
tactically.
Basketball. Stylistically, I think it would have been interesting because it's like so many. We also would have had an opportunity to fact check in real time, like, Jokic was fine and really, really good.
Yes.
And Draymond told you as much when they played the Warriors last year. So mm-hmm. what does it look like at full strength? The Warriors, I feel like they would have had a handful trying to defend Jokic mm-hmm. again, certainly with the full complement of the talent around him that he didn't mm-hmm. have last year. It would have been interesting to watch. The Nuggets would have been a one seed. Would they have been favored? We don't know. We won't know. But now we have the possibility, the likelihood, just from an odds standpoint, the Nuggets will likely win the title. And then it allows you to look at that in a new way of, you know, I don't know if next year we'll see the Heat and the Nuggets open, you know, the calendar. It'll probably more likely be the Warriors and the Nuggets, if I had to guess, more likely than not. And if that's the case, you know, like, what does that look like going into next season? All of a sudden, we've gotten used to seeing Draymond trying to guard Jokic. Who is that if it's not Draymond? Like, it's, there's so many questions to ask, but I really wish we had been able to see those two teams play each other at full strength this season. Again, it wasn't like a preference of me preferring to see them do it, but obviously
it just
would have
been a fascinating stylistic, just a stylistic, you know, I think we all, after last year's series, wanted to see how Denver would guard the Warriors and how the Warriors would guard the Nuggets at full strength. That's what it comes down to.
Exactly. So now we run the risk of seeing this team, like, essentially in a new era. If they're doing it without Draymond, it's a completely different team.
Yes.
Not just X's and O's, but temperament. Leadership from that standpoint. Fire. Does it make the team easier? Do they have more cohesion in some ways because he's not there? That's possible. We really don't know because we've only known this iteration of this team with those three guys. Shout out to Looney. He's incredibly important. Shout out to Poole, who, even if he wasn't good this season, was still really important, good and bad. Shout out to Wiggins because we know how important he was. There were people making an argument he should have been finals MVP. We know he's important. We saw how important he was when he missed all that time this season. So we know all that, but we haven't ever seen them achieve something significant without those three guys there. We haven't seen them win a championship without those three guys. So it's a huge decision. And again, Draymond has told you himself, and we just know that Bob Myers, the mediation role that he's played with this organization time and again, whether it was the KD stuff, whether it was the Poole thing, whether it's just the contract talk and everything else, we know that Bob Myers was integral to that. We know he had a good relationship and a respectful, respected relationship with Draymond. So if that fundamentally changes that, we're looking at a completely new era for this team, which maybe is necessary. We don't know yet, but we can assume that Bob Myers would have played a role in trying to bring him back somehow, even if it was at less money or whatever else. Draymond might have had more of a willingness to hear that out from him than someone else.
He would have more trust in Bob Myers saying things to him, more likely than other people, even if they're internal. Not as a knock on those new guys, but as a testament to his relationship with Bob. Exactly. I'll say this. I think we'll get one more year of Steph, Clay, and Dre, but, and I don't think I'm like coming up with some crazy take here, but I think there's a very good chance we end up looking back on this decision as kind of the beginning of the end of Steph, Clay, and Dre as a trio and how this team reconfigures around Steph moving forward.
Agreed.
Chris, that is going to do it for today's just jam-packed episode of the pod. I'm so excited, man. I just want to say, personally, growing up in South Florida, I remember from 2010 to 2014, you know, every year Miami was the center of the basketball world and how much I loved reading everyone's work. It had been my dream to cover an NBA Finals in Miami, you know, in the state I grew up. I'm so excited. I'm so excited for the Finals. I'm excited to see that guy, Jokic.
From that standpoint, it's very cool.
I appreciate that, man. I really do, and I just hope it's fun. I hope we get another great series. I'm excited to get to cover them alongside you. That will do it for today's episode. Thank you so much to everyone for listening in. Thank you to we don't shout him out enough as we should, our incredible producer, Shelby Royston. Shout out to Shelves. And we will talk to you guys after game one of the NBA Finals.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.